ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Speaking Out.
We're mainly discussing land rights and economic empowerment.
Aboriginal enterprises in mining, exploration,
and
energy.
I'd like to talk a little bit about Indigenous constitutional recognition.
With Larissa Berendt.
It's a fresh view coming up.
On ABC Radio.
Success is that we are the place that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across this nation, across the many nations, go to tell stories, to be heard, to trust that media is there for them, that it's their media and that it's the place where they can speak, be listened to and to hear other voices. But it's also a place where all Australians can go to have a really powerful touch point into the stories of the oldest continuing culture and to hear the way that culture is changing and evolves and shifts and how ancient practice sits alongside modern storytelling.
Dan Borsha appointed General Manager of NITV, and Auntie Pat Turner announces her retirement after a lifetime dedicated to our people.
We believe ultimately a partnership between community-controlled organisations and governments will achieve better outcomes for our people, where we are both inside and outside of the tent.
This is Speaking Out. I'm Larissa Berendt. When you enter into the world of journalism, they say one skill you need to have to be a good storyteller is curiosity. Always be curious about the world around you and constantly ask questions. Well, from a young age, Dan Borsha had the skill of curiosity mastered. His mother's water heater at the back of their house, stocked with instant coffee, milk and some tea bags, had people coming and going from his house. All walks of life would go over for a cuppa and a chat, and Dan was always front and centre, ready to listen to people's stories. Those stories didn't just shape his worldview, they inspired him to be curious and look deeper into the bigger picture. And as he got older, he used his curious mind to mould stories that go beyond the surface and show how different and complex our communities are. Dan spent his time at the ABC reporting on the many issues within our communities, from moderating debates to leading the coverage of the referendum on an Indigenous voice to Parliament. His passion in helping audiences better understand First Nations communities has always stood out to me. His time as chair of the Bonner Committee helped create a more culturally safe and aware environment for ABC staff. Now, in his new role as general manager of NITV, he says he wants to continue to amplify First Nations stories and perspectives.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for the elders, particularly the Wurrumbungu elders, where I grew up in Tennant Creek, who, when I was very young, they were the ones that really wrapped their arms around me, and they gave me a sense of grounding that felt and feels all but lost to our family because of our own history and the circumstances that surround my family history. And there was something about those elders and the care that they showed and the wisdom and generosity and the way they brought you in, regardless of kind of everything else. So I was really, from a young age, fortunate to have that grounding. And I think for me, I've reflected a lot about what the start of my career was. And it was that. It was listening to stories. And I was talking to my mum just the other day, and we were talking about at the house in Tennant Creek where we lived, they used to have like this water heater, like a massive kind of urn out in the little patio area with instant coffee. And there was just this ever presence of people coming. And sometimes it was elders, business people. I remember a time when I got home and there was someone there who'd just got out of prison and was talking about their experiences. And so I was learning about the world through other people's eyes and through their stories and their experiences. And there's something that instilled in me about the crucial importance of understanding people through their stories. I reckon that's what set up my whole career in journalism and media and storytelling, was those really formative experiences of listening to understand, sitting there bug-eyed, not understanding the context or the whole picture of what was being said, but really hearing the passion and the purpose in people's voices.
you know, obviously for people who've grown up in a community like yours, especially for young men, there aren't many pathways. Mm. And really, there's obviously a lot of things that can happen in somebody's life, but that it's not an unusual blackfella experience, even for those who of us who've done really well, that we've got friends or cousins who've had the other trajectory. Mm. And what do you think it's been the things in your life that have, I guess, helped you to break those cycles that are so difficult in many other ways for people to get away from?
I reckon it's a couple of things. It's the opportunities that I've had, the really strong women who have nurtured me, from my mum to some of those elders, the editor of the first newspaper, that have really been backing me and behind me and supporting me and encouraging me when I didn't feel like there was any other option. And I remember there was one experience where I must have been about 21 and I was living at home working at the Ten and District Times, and the editor, Jasmine, and my mum, Helen, got together and decided actually I'd become too big of a fish in a small pond. And so in the same moment, I got sacked and kicked out of home and was forced to leave. And it was a really tough love approach at the time that I could not understand it. And now when I look back, I thought if they didn't do that, what would have been? And then I think about a year before that, there was a local MP in our town who was an Aboriginal minister of parliament, and he'd had a media advisor job going. And I applied for it, and not because of any political persuasion. I was so green then about politics, but I wanted to work for him because I liked him and I believed in him as a person, as an individual. And his mum, Nana Heather, his sister lived down the street. And so I'd known the family my whole life. And I got right through to the interview, end of the interview stage, and he intervened to stop me from getting the job. And for years, there was just no context. It was just, no, you got the job, and then no, you don't have the job. And years later, I was talking to him and I said, why did you do that? Like, what was that about? And he said, well, I knew that you weren't going for that job because you were politically aligned. He said, I don't think you even had a conscious grasp of what was the difference between political parties on a really deep level. I was so young. And he said, I knew that if you went for that job, you were going to throw away your career because you would just be then party aligned because you'd inadvertently signed up. And he said, I just always saw that there was more that you had to give and that there was more drive there. And we talked about it a lot up until his passing just a couple of years ago. And I was fortunate enough to be in Alice for his funeral. And I spoke to his widow and I was telling that story, and we were just laughing about the kind of wisdom that he could, and what he could see was much like what my editor and my mum could see, that I had no grasp of it at that time.
It's such a theme, you know, obviously I've been doing the show for almost for 10 years now, and it strikes me how often I'm talking to Aboriginal people who've achieved excellence and who are excellent, how much that is a thread that they didn't see it, but the elders did, and that tough love.
Yeah.
I have had plenty of that myself. And I think there's a part of you that knows it's coming from a good place, even if it's hard and you don't quite understand it.
Yeah.
But I look back now and I think, God, that was like the smartest thing that anyone ever said to me. That's been like a North Star ever since.
Yeah.
Let's talk about then how you did find your way into journalism.
So I was originally the window cleaner at the Ten and District Times. My mum had cooked this up when I was about 13, I think I was. So I go down and wash the windows, and I always had that yearning. It was like you're on the outside looking
in. Well, you literally were, weren't
literally.
You?
Literally. I was cleaning the window so I could see it. I mean, it's not just a metaphor. It was my life. And the editor gave me a chance. And there was this one day we're on a weekly newspaper that came out on Fridays, and Wednesday night was the deadline to get to publish. And this was when it was still got printed physically and before everything went on online and digital. And there was this gap on the sports page, and Jasmine sent me out to cover the netball. And sport has never been my forte in reporting. I'm much more passionate about people and politics and how things happen around us. And so I remember agonising for hours and hours, taking so many photos, taking every note about this, the game, getting back and labouring over this piece. And when it was published, I think that my byline might have almost been bigger than the text on the actual story. That might be a slight exaggeration, but you know what I mean. And then it instilled in me, like when I saw my name printed, that pride that I'd created that. And then I just was given opportunities to grow and to learn, and really importantly, to make mistakes. And there were things that I wrote about and things that had been written that easily could have been picked up before they went to print, but weren't. And they taught me really important lessons. I remember once I wrote the name of an administrator, so equivalent to a governor of a state, the territories have administrators, three different ways in one story. And when you get a formal letter of complaint from Admiralty House,
what's happened to your editor on that?
Yeah, that's right. Things are not looking good at that time. But the lesson that it taught me was about that you've got to check and double check and triple check and absolutely. And even to this day, that was 25 years ago, I don't write a name in an article unless I have double checked, triple checked and made absolutely certain that I've got it right. Because if you make a mistake on something as simple as a name, what else are you making mistakes on?
Mm.
And it was just like it was a rush of trying to write it. And so it's always stuck with me. And then that just kind of catapulted me, those experiences, into then working in metropolitan newspapers, then into broadcast at NITV, and then, you know, the catapult from there.
Catapult into the ABC. We'll talk about that a bit before we talk about your next catapult back. But, I mean, it is an interesting kind of juxtaposition, because you are so thorough in the way that you report. And I think particularly I've always felt like you've understood, especially when you're reporting in the Indigenous space, and of course you do report more broadly than that, that you're always really careful about getting the facts right so that people can really rely and trust you. But I guess as somebody who loves radio, because I'm very shy and I hate being in front of a camera, I've always thought you've taken some really great risks, and maybe they're calculated risks, but doing sort of live panel shows, reading the news on air, and of course of the coverage of the referendum, which we'll dig into in a little bit more. Do you feel like you've pushed yourself, or do you feel like you've always felt natural at each of those different steps? Because I would have been terrified.
Yeah, every time I step into a studio, I feel absolutely terrified. I felt it when I walked through the door in this room behind you, and my humour was the cover to try and combat the nerves and the feeling that you don't have everything that you need. And I've felt like that every time I've walked into a studio. What I've got better at is how to manage those butterflies, and that if you don't have those, I think it would be worse than having them. If you don't feel that there's something at stake, it's come to feel more natural to me, but it's never been fully comfortable. There's always the kind of edge about what might happen in a live environment. And there've been lots of moments where things have happened that you just don't really know how to react. I mean, I was on air the day of the horrific Bondi Junction stabbing, and that was happening in real time, live on air. You're trying to navigate what is happening, but also be very conscious that you are the only filter between people's experiences of seeing something horrific unfold and what the audience gets. And so I've always felt that thing that in those moments where I was absolutely packing it and was petrified of making a mistake and exacerbating any of that harm and hurt, I'm always very conscious about the respect that you've got to hold for that position, that seat that you've got in that studio, and bring as much calm as you possibly can. And for me, that's always been to slow things down and to ask questions that are about understanding and not trauma baiting or not trying to lure people into a space when they're already in a place of vulnerability. You have to be very, very careful and very conscious and respectful of that. And I think that's been one of the things that is that sensibility that has really put me in good stead right across my career of just slowing things down and listening really carefully to understand what actually is being said and what's happening there.
I've always admired the way that you position your audience. You're always thinking about them. That really comes through. You're not on air because you've got a big ego and you want everyone to see you. I love that you really care about it. And it's also reassuring to hear that you get nerves because you always look so polished.
Yeah.
And I did a few little stints of reading, of hosting The Point on NITV. And I remember one night the teleprompter didn't work and I was just like, that's it. I can't cope.
I'm out.
I can't cope anymore. This is not for me. Give me just the...
Which, and you know what? That surprises me because you're someone that I look up to as this incredible brain, this amazing thinker and with an ability to grapple with and synthesize enormous amounts of information and to translate that into ways that we can understand really easily. So it surprises me that you have that level of uncomfortability as
no,
well.
No, I was a shocker.
Well, we'll have to try and see if we can't get you back in again.
Yes, well, I think I'm much better behind the camera and I love being here in the studio where people can just feel like they're sitting in on a very intimate conversation. Now, of course, you've been a host and have read the news and sort of been in those sorts of positions. But I want to acknowledge the really difficult and deep journalism you did around the referendum. And I know we had talks then about what was happening at the time and some reflections after it had all been done and dusted. But I wonder now with the passage of time, first of all, how you look back on that period in terms of what it meant for your career, what you learnt and what you learnt about yourself, because that was a really, really tough time.
It was full on. I've never been as tested and challenged as I was in 2023. And I remember talking to you about this and how initially my instinct was to say no, because what I feared might happen was what happened, that it became kind of the discussion or debate that it did. But it was a couple of elders that I really value who I got in touch with, and they said, no, you've got to do it. Like, this is actually where you've got to be, and this is what your career has been preparing you for. And so I had to be really clear when I walked in, when I said yes, that I was taking a singular focus to understand where people were coming from and to respect that and to bring the right lens of accountability in those moments. And that meant creating space to hear positions and perspectives and to understand the very, very many reasons that people were voting no, what the so-called progressive no meant, and then what were the reasons underpinning the reason that people were voting yes, and creating a respectful environment in order to do that. And of course, challenging and questioning things, but in a way that was about finding answers, not about creating gotcha moments. And of course, that approach didn't land well with everyone. And there were people on all sides of the debate who were very happy when they were happy with the reporting and were very unhappy when they weren't happy with the reporting. And that was just something that I needed to grapple with. What I didn't expect is the level of emotional outlet from people of all walks of life, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people on all parts of the debate, Australians from every corner and every background of this nation. I didn't expect some of the levels of threats and behaviours of people that just did not want to hear any of it. And that was particularly challenging, and more so for my partner, because I was so often busy and caught up in going from studio to studio to interview to story to this to that. There was not a lot of space in my mind or heart to be able to think about things that I couldn't control. But everyone else was taking that on board. And I subsequently found out that there were friends who was seeing some horrendous stuff that was being written and said about me, that were sharing that with my partner, and they were shielding me from that because they were worried that that might have an impact on the way I was doing my job. That was really, on one hand, incredibly heartening to know that they were backing you, and devastating to think that people were saying those things. So I learned an extraordinary amount about myself. I also learned a great deal about our country, and some of the things that really have worried me are that I think we have lost the ability to just have a conversation and agree to disagree. And I worry in the world that we're seeing that has been really amplified since. And maybe 2023 just gave us an exposure to what was already happening in this country and around the world. But I do worry about that. I worry that we are seemingly having this challenge to just being able to talk about things and to understand different perspectives. And there's almost this with us or against us mentality that we see rising, and you only have to switch on the news to see it each and every day. And so I think there are a lot of lessons to come from it. One of the things that I worry about is that afterwards we didn't really have the kind of national debate that you have about when things go wrong. So I think about federal elections, and any time that a major party loses, they will do some soul searching, particularly if it's a big loss or there's major prevailing change. And then they'll have a discussion, and that gets kind of ventilated into the media, and everyone gets brought in. I don't know if we did that. Actually, I'm pretty sure we didn't after the referendum. And I know that there were a lot of people that were really hurting and didn't want to step into that space. But I wonder if that maybe created a little bit of a vacuum around debate and discussion about Indigenous affairs more broadly, that made it more difficult for politicians that wanted to create change and easier for politicians who didn't.
That's the first part of my conversation with NITV's General Manager, Dan Borsha. This is Speaking Out. I'm Larissa Berendt. The Seagull.
That had us paralyzed.
Sit a while.
Straight.
That was Tia Gostolo and Lengths with their song Strangers.
This is Speaking Out, a National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Affairs show produced and presented by Indigenous broadcasters on ABC Radio.
On this episode, I'm joined by journalist and broadcaster Dan Borsha. He talks to me about his journey from cleaning windows at his local newspaper to now being one of the prominent voices in First Nations media. I want to just talk a little bit about another aspect of the work that you did at the ABC, that people who did see you on television, and can I just say, you worked so hard at that time, I would always see you running from here to there. You must have had so much frequent flyer points. But of course, you had a very big on-air presence during that time. But I want to draw attention and talk to you a little bit about some of the behind-the-scenes work, because I think it's really important in terms of getting a sense that you're not just somebody who looks at the world and says, oh, there's a problem there, but that you actually do work for change. And, of course, that is reflected by your time here as chair of the Bonner Committee at the ABC. And so for people who don't know what that is, can you just tell us a little bit about what the Bonner Committee is and why it's so important as part of the ABC?
It's absolutely crucial, the Bonner Committee. It was established in honour of the late ABC board director, politician, first Aboriginal person in Parliament, Neville Bonner AO. And it is really an avenue to speak about issues that are both affecting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander staff in the ABC and communities, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities that interact with the ABC. And it's an avenue to speak directly to the managing director. So it's a really important way to talk to the boss about things that are happening on the ground, outside the organisation and inside. And it was created not long after Neville Bonner stepped off the board of the ABC in 1991, I think. And as we speak today, Neville Bonner is the only Aboriginal person who has ever sat on the board of the ABC. And I think that's staggering. The ABC is more than 90 years old, and anyone who's not familiar, the board gets appointed by the federal government of the day, and there is a whole range and raft of processes that go sit behind that, of which I know you speak about governance a lot. This is a real wheelhouse of yours as well, Larissa. But I think it's pretty surprising that in 2026, there has only been one Aboriginal person ever to sit on the board of the National Broadcaster, an organisation that we often hear is the most crucial national organisation that we have, and certainly telling stories. I just think it is a very surprising thing. And so the Bonner Committee was really established as an avenue, I think, to be able to make sure that there were different voices being heard. I was fortunate enough to be asked to chair the committee when Sally Riley stepped down in 2023. And it is an extraordinary committee. It's now being chaired by Salua Middleton, who's recently taken up the role of head of Indigenous audio. Incredible leader and visionary thinker about how we tell stories. And so I'm so proud. I got to work really closely with Salua. She was my deputy on the committee. But we worked as really a team throughout that time and had some pretty challenging stuff that we navigated through 2023. Of course, there were some really serious allegations about racism aimed at presenters, and there were calls from outside of the ABC by really well-known elders for action to be taken. And it's why Salua and I called for there to be the independent external racism review that would report publicly. Of course, Dr. Terry Janke worked really tirelessly on and delivered and did it in such a way that was grounded in cultural safety. And of course, this is not unfamiliar to you, Larissa. You've done similar reviews into aspects of the AFL and the like.
And I was interviewed for this one.
Yeah. And it's a big deal to call for it. It's a big deal for it to be accepted. And the thing that I was most worried about throughout that process was that it might do additional harm. But the thing I was most comforted by was that Terry had that at the front of mind, and it was absolutely part of ensuring that the process of that review didn't inadvertently do more harm. And I think we got to a point where that report, Listen Deeply, Act Strongly, is an absolute powerhouse of what it means to really have an Indigenous-led and designed process that looks into the way an institution operates, the systems and processes that are at play, and what are the gaps that lead to the kind of behaviours where people are feeling othered and not part of an organisation. And I just want to throw my hat off to the entire Bonner Committee, but particularly to Kelly Williams, who's now the Director of First Nations Strategy, and Salil Middleton, of course, the Head of Indigenous Audio and Bonner Chair, who we worked so closely together to make sure that we were bringing perspectives and that extra care throughout that process. And that was rigorous and it was grueling and it was full on, but it was important. It was really important.
So you've left a huge legacy, and I just thought it was important to honour not just what you did on screen, of course, and achieve there, and being a role model in that way, but that really important behind the scenes work about cultural change. So last year you left the ABC to take on a new role as the general manager of NITV. Oh, Lordy, talk us through what that moment was like when you decided that this was what you wanted to do next and what you felt when you got the call to say, you're on.
it was an extraordinary process. I felt like throughout the referendum year, I did so many of the things that were probably on my bucket list for the next 10 years of my life, hosting major national programs, co-hosting a referendum night, leading a Four Corners investigation, doing all of these things. And so when I got to the end of that, I was thinking, like, where do I grow? Like, how do I keep on growing? And I'd been thinking about that a lot over the 2024 and the start of 2025. And when this job came up, I saw it and initially I thought, oh, I've got skills and experience that do that and that. And is this the thing? And so I threw my hat in the ring, and it was such a rigorous interview process. It was quite extraordinary. And going through it made me realise just how much I wanted it and how important I thought it was. And there were interviews where Aunty Rhoda Roberts, the elder in residence, was there. And we got to have these amazing conversations about media and journalism and what is the art of the possible and where to into the future. And I remember when I got the call, like it was almost out of body. Like you're sitting there going, what does this mean? This is big. This is a huge change. And underpinning all of that was purpose. And I knew that I was coming home because that's where I started as a broadcast journalist. That NITV gave me the skills and equipped me to tell stories on TV and gave me the ability to travel the country and capture these amazing stories that weren't being told elsewhere. And so the idea of coming back in and being part of that team and to help drive the next chapter. I mean, you've been involved in NITV over so many years, right from the beginning.
Yes, inaugural chair.
Yeah, that's right.
Almost killed me.
And so next year is the 20-year anniversary of NITV. And what an incredible moment of time we are in that, as you know, Larissa, that NITV was built over decades of calls for action and for there to be a broadcaster that was centrally focused on hearing, elevating and amplifying Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voices. And what NITV has grown into is just extraordinary, with news offerings, with the team that Natar Matt runs that is delivering cutting-edge news across platforms, Dina Curtis's team that is telling stories in really different ways, some of which just won awards. Just recently, Journey Home, the story of David Golpilor, picked up an actor award just a little while ago. And there's a whole lot of thinking about how to tell stories in different ways and what are stories that need to be told and that might not get told elsewhere, where NITV is the natural home for them. It is such an extraordinary time, but of course not without challenges. We are in a world that is in a state of flux where we see the rise of misinformation, disinformation, news avoidance, an erosion of trust in mainstream media that is absolutely chilling. And all of this at a time when we're seeing year-on-year growth of linear TV, of NITV, which to my knowledge is the only broadcast network that is growing in linear, while we're seeing extraordinary growth in consumption hours across all of our offerings. Digital is going through the roof. So at a time when there's so much disruption, we're also seeing an appetite for the stories that NITV is stepping into and telling that is just so special and so heartening as well.
You're right. There are so many challenges, but I really love that what comes through when you talk about it is the passion you've got for this space. And I wonder, I mean, it must feel in some ways like you're new to the job. It must feel like you've been there forever. But now, what's your reflections on what you've really loved about it? What do you love about it?
It's almost 5 months that I've been there. I love the passion of the people, that notwithstanding all of those challenges, the attitude is can-do. How do we find a solution? What is the opportunity ahead? For me, the biggest joy of my job is creating space and opportunities and finding secondments and ways to give people opportunities to try something different and to elevate and to have room to be growing and creating and telling stories in so many different ways, stepping into spaces that I'm not incredibly familiar with and learning. I'm learning so much, Larissa. It's amazing. I feel like I'm a sponge and I'm like asking questions of the team. I keep apologizing, saying I'm sorry I'm asking so many questions. They're loving it. They're like, no, we want to talk about these things. And this is what we're talking about is the future and where we're going and how do we get there. And it's so exciting and being able to work and learn from Tanya Denning-Orman, who of course has been at NITV since the start, is now the director of First Nations across SBS and has gone from leading and nurturing NITV into this incredible space where she is creating change across the whole broadcaster. It is an amazing moment. And of course, and I see Tanya working really closely with Kelly here at the ABC, two really strong Aboriginal women who are at the fore of having these big conversations about carving out space in national broadcasters. This is something that, we haven't seen before, and what an opportunity this is.
It does strike me that there is something that's good for the soul about being, at the top of your game. You were the face of the referendum. Yeah. As you said, you achieved so much when you were here, very high-profile things. And then, not that you're starting at the bottom, but you've started something new and you're on a big learning curve. Yeah. There's something good for the soul, isn't there, about doing that?
Do you know what, Larissa, you made a point before that I've been thinking about about calculated risk. And if I think about back across my career, I think the thing that I've done is taken the leap for things that others might have thought, actually, that's not a clear line of a trajectory from A to B. And what I've been really fortunate is that I've been able to map my own journey. People have taken extraordinary chances and given me enough rope. And at least in the past, I've managed to navigate that and succeed. And that's certainly what my hope and intention is now. But it is incredible. I mean, I get asked this a lot. Like, why would you leave a really high-profile job news reading when you're seemingly at the top of the game and everything is kicking along to go into management and administration space? And for me, it's both administration, governance, it's also journalism. So it's not that far of a leap. It comes back to that central point about telling stories. Everything that I do is about telling stories. How do we do that? How do we grow? How do we learn? And it's just such a gift. I feel like I'm a custodian of the work of that's been done by so many, yourself included, in getting us to this point. And there's a great weight of responsibility that comes with that I'm just here, I've got to do the best that I can before I pass it on and let the next person do the best they can.
And it is, the unique place where community people get to create a story and have it actually heard. So there's enormous capacity building that's going on there as well that you're overseeing.
And yeah. I'm so excited about that. I love the idea of being able to create pathways and you see these incredibly young and talented storytellers across commissioning, across different programming, journalism. And the idea of having a role where you can not just talk about what would be great to do, but actually do some of the doing and drive that is so exciting. And I'm really, really looking forward to being able to make that one of the key pillars of what I'm hoping to achieve.
You may have already answered this, but I'll ask it anyway, because I'm sure you've thought more deeply about vision. What would success in this role look like for you?
Success is that we are the place that, that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across this nation, across the many nations, go to tell stories, to be heard, to trust that that media is there for them, that it's their media and that it's the place where they can speak, be listened to and to hear other voices. But it's also a place where all Australians can go to have a really powerful touch point into the stories of the oldest continuing culture and to hear the way that culture is changing and evolves and shifts and how ancient practice sits alongside modern storytelling. There is such an opportunity here. And so my vision is to make, is really, if you boil it down, one about accessibility, to make NITV the place everyone goes to tell stories and to be heard.
I love watching NITV News, and I shouldn't say this on the ABC, where we're so proud of our news service, but what I love about it is, of course, it always prioritises First Nations news from First Nations perspective. So you're going to get stories there that you won't see anywhere else. And I love looking at the news coverage and sort of going, oh, there's Uncle such and such, or there's Cuz over there. You know, you see people. But what strikes me, and I love it when this happens, is how many non-Indigenous Australians say to me, I love watching NITV News.
Yeah. Do you know, this really surprised me and probably shouldn't have, but when I was announced in the role, there were lots of First Nations people that got in touch that, including yourself, that I've known for a very long time, that were so generous and so kind. And then there were heaps of pastoralists and people who got in touch and went, oh, this is great. NITV is my go-to channel. And I didn't expect that. And I didn't expect farmers to be getting in touch going, yeah, this is what we love and we watch this and what a great get you are for them. And I just didn't see that coming. And that's really what I've been, I guess I'm touching on when I talk about the place that all Australians go, because this, you know, we can find common ground if we listen to each other, if we understand where each other are coming from. One of the things I observed in the referendum year is that we don't really know each other as Australians. There are so many myths and misconceptions about who you are and what your background is and what that might mean. And I think the more that we can understand each other, ultimately the better off we are.
There's been a long journey in journalism. You started out washing the windows of a newspaper office, and now you're general manager of a television station, the Indigenous television station, the National Indigenous television station. Just what are your reflections on what you've seen over that time in terms of how the industry has evolved, especially in relation to First Nations people?
I think that we are seeing more and more First Nations people on air, which is an amazing thing, that most mornings you can switch on and see my good mate Bridget Brennan reading the news and helping us to navigate the start of the day, that you are now hearing here on the ABC, Isabella Higgins doing AM across Radio National and news radio in the mornings, that you turn on Channel 7 and you see Marlena Wop or our other friend Brooke Boney, who was on Channel 9 and pops in occasionally, Narelda Jacobs across Channel 10, Nada Matt leading a whole Indigenous news bulletin along with some incredible people. I look at in this very organisation, I bumped into Ryan Little just before, an incredible reporter and sports reporter who's now bureau chief of the ABC Alice Springs Bureau. He's got a massive remit around shepherding storytelling there for Arunda people, for his people, but also for all that audience and for all Australians. So we're seeing this incredible rise of storytellers across all platforms and all mediums and many of the networks. But we're also seeing, I think, at a time when there is a huge propensity to be finding fault in each other, and we see that in the state of the world that we are in, that I think Indigenous storytelling creates opportunities and pathways to be able to understand and find different forms of connection. But of course, there are really strong headwinds that are challenging that. And you only have to look at comment sections of different news articles. And actually, let me retract that. Don't look at the comment sections.
That's what I say to everyone. Because, don't read the comments.
Because they're not good, and for the most part are not helpful and not constructive about the contest of ideas, but they're about trying to diminish people and to shut people down. And I think that while we are seeing so many incredible changes, we're also seeing massive challenges mm-hmm. as well. But that's what comes with change, doesn't it? Is that we've kind of got to find ways to navigate it. I mean, the fact that you and I are sitting here on a Radio National program that you've been hosting for 10 years is something. Like that's not nothing, that you have these conversations that bridge politics and policy, procedure, governance, but ultimately that all of the stories that you do are about people. And that's the connection, isn't it? Like that's where we find, what is that point that where we have a connection despite everything that might be different about us, and how do we understand each other maybe just a little bit better?
That's lovely, yeah. Now, also, I just wanted to touch on the fact that I do know that running a television station isn't the only thing that you're doing. So I wonder if you could share with us what your other projects are at the moment.
Yeah, so there's so much exciting stuff happening at NITV, but I'm also working on a book that came out of the referendum year and of interviews that I was doing with elders. And in fact, you were one of the people that encouraged me to write it and to get back into that type of writing. And so I've been working on that and interviewing elders and just hearing their stories and perspectives. And so it's been a real labor of love, and I'm so passionate about it, and amplify the voices and perspectives of elders that have had impacts on me. But it's not about me. The book is about them, and this is a platform to be able to share the stories that they've been happy to share. And the generosity that you see in this book, Larissa, is just it. Every time I read it, I feel overwhelmed by how much the elders have been willing to share. And on the sidelines of that, there were lots of stuff that they talked to me about that they didn't want to go in the book, but they wanted me to have that as context of and touch points into their lives. And it was just, it's been such a rewarding experience. It's been a real joy.
Well, it shows the level of trust they have in you too, which must be very humbling in a way.
It really staggers me. And I remember a journo said to me many, many years ago when I was first starting, she was one of the first Aboriginal newsreaders in the country. And she said, when someone talks to you, you always have to absolutely respect their voice and that they've trusted you. And so you've got to make sure that's the North Star in everything you do. And it's always stuck with me.
I don't know if it's connected or not, but one of the things that I noticed when you were on air was you would always have these fabulous brooches. And whenever I'd run into you, you'd have a story around those brooches. And I wondered if that was also a part of how you stay connected and strong.
I think it's a way of showing a bit of your personality, isn't it? And a little bit of who you are. The confines of being a newsreader and on air are quite strict. And for a bloke, it's, you know, a suit and usually a tie. And so I'd often wear ties that have stories that really resonate with me. And then I had an auntie that gave me a little brooch. And then when I wore that, I then had all these other aunties in my family and from the community who were just would give me brooches and say, this is the story and this made me think about you. I remember there was one day I had like a little package rock up and it was just a brooch with no message. And then I get a random call from an auntie who'd been a mentor of mine a couple of weeks later. And she said, did you get that brooch I sent?
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Yeah, I didn't know who it came from. So I just kind of left it on the bench and thought, well, someone will call when the time's right. In terms of staying grounded, I think it is always to remind myself that what I'm doing is for others, that my job is about creating space and pathways and reasons for people to be able to step into the media and tell their stories and to trust the integrity of what they're listening to and reading and absorbing through our channels. And also reminding myself that it's not about me, that I'm the person there right now, but I really am just the custodian of it and the guardian, I guess, of how we do the work for now. And then when the time comes, it'll be time to pass that on to someone else. And hopefully I've done no harm and have made things stronger and a little bit better and made it easier and created more ways to tell stories.
I think you've already left an amazing legacy, and what's very exciting is that you're now in a position to build on that. It'll be wonderful to see what happens next. Very excited to already have a date with you to come back to talk about your new book.
Can't wait.
So, Dan, I just want to thank you for your trailblazing, for the care with which you do your work, not just the passion, but the care, the thoughtfulness, the sense of responsibility you carry with you when you tell story as a custodian. And, you know, I think what we've also reflected on in this conversation is the very real way that wherever you're in an institution, you really do leave it better than where you found it. So thank you so much for being with us on Speaking Out.
Thank you. I hope so. And just hope that I'm doing all that I possibly can, as we all are. But thank you so much. It's been such a joy.
That was my conversation with NITV's General Manager, Dan Borsha. I really enjoyed our chat and the fun dynamic between us. We wish him all the best in his new role. I'm sure he'll make an impact.
This is Speaking Out.
That's the key to it all, keeping connected to country.
On ABC Radio.
Earlier this month, Aunty Pat Turner announced she would be stepping down from her roles as CEO of the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, also known as NACHO, and lead convener of the Coalition of Peaks. As a proud Gundanji Arunda woman, she has always put the needs of First Nations communities first, helping to strengthen the community-controlled sector while continuing to champion partnerships between policymakers and communities. As Aunty Pat begins her transition away from public life, I wanted to take a moment to reflect on her career and the impact and influence she has had on our communities. For me personally, she's been one of my greatest role models and influences. I got to work closely with her when she was the CEO and I was the inaugural chair of NITV. She is a mixture of dedication, passion, determination and grace. From her time as a public servant, including as CEO of ATSIC, through her roles at NITV, NACHO and the Coalition of Peaks, she is a formidable woman who leaves an extraordinary legacy.
Lasting change can only come when it is embedded in the culture of organisations. And as we know, traditionally, Australian governments are slow to adapt. The matter of much-needed funding and new funding for services and supports for our peoples remains an issue that is yet to be fully addressed by governments. What is different now, though, is that we at least have a seat at the negotiating table on an equal basis with governments. We believe ultimately a partnership between community-controlled organisations and governments will achieve better outcomes for our people, where we are both inside and outside of the tent.
That's outgoing CEO of the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, Aunty Pat Turner. We wish her all the best in this next phase of her life and thank her for her unmatched contributions to the advancement of our people. That's the show for now. Join us again next time for more stories from across Indigenous Australia. Speaking Out is produced by Janaea Gibbs-Muir. Our senior producer is Jay McAllister. And as always, you can find us on ABC Listen or on social media via ABC Indigenous, along with our titter show, Away, hosted by Rudy Bremer. This week, choreographer Francis Rings joins Rudy to discuss how Bangarra Dance Theatre and the Australian Ballet Company have come together for a new major collaboration, Flora. Make sure you don't miss that one. I'm Larissa Berendt and this is Speaking Out.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.